From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Of course, my voice you're familiar with hearing. I'm Brandon Adams. I'm here with you every day, but very special today because of where we are, which I'll explain to you here coming up. Also have Jeff Sintel on hand here as well for the entirety of our Dog Nation Daily broadcast. We are live here in Augusta, Georgia, with the Exchange Club of Augusta. Jeff and I looking forward to hanging out with them, having a little lunch and talking some football later on today. A chance to also do Dog Nation Daily kind of outside of our Atlanta bubble here for a change, which is really fun. And Jeff, let me just say thanks so much for being with me today. Looking forward to being with you and looking forward to a slightly looser, a little bit more interesting format here for a change on a Dog Nation Daily. Good to see you.
Well, yeah, guys, good to be with you. I think this is the second official time you and I have actually been on a program together.
Something along those lines, yeah.
You showed up for us one time on Before the Hedges, so I owed Brandon a daily, I guess, in the swap meet of programming a little bit. And we're here in Augusta where my days as a Cub reporter, I think it was my third job as a reporter, and I spent about 4 years here writing for the Augusta Chronicle. Have a lot of good friends, a lot of good people that I met in Augusta, and lots of times when there's a chance for us to take the Dog Nation stuff on the road, I'm going to do my very best to try and acquiesce and make that stop, because the 706 and Richmond County and Columbia County was pretty good to me, and I like to just kind of pay it back.
Well, it's also a great day to have you here for the entirety of our broadcast, and we'll be taking a lot of comments on both Facebook and YouTube as we discuss here today. You know, coming on the heels of what's been going on with UGA recruiting, this is actually kind of a fascinating time to do a little bit more long-form conversation with you, because there is today going to be a lot of reaction for the Georgia fans that follow UGA recruiting closely about the fact that Derek Rambo Hunter, and I don't mean to like put you on the witness stand here, but you did say when you joined us on Tuesday, in terms of those defensive line priorities, start paying attention if a guy like Derek Rambo Hunter were to go somewhere else. Well, Derek Hunter did go somewhere else. He committed to Florida State yesterday, had a long-time relationship with Willie Taggart and that staff there, and committed to Florida State, which is obviously going to bring about a lot of questions on the minds of a lot of Georgia fans about what this means for Georgia, its relationship with Hunter. Obviously, we saw plenty of guys flip before the end of the 2018 cycle, and maybe a more global perspective of what it means for Georgia with its defensive line recruiting. This is the one position group, as you know, and I know you dealt with this a lot last night on your Wednesday night regular Facebook Live conversation. This is the one position group that, at least for right now, is lagging behind the others in terms of just the rocket ship recruiting. You don't see that for defensive line, seemingly, the way that you do for the other positions.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of ground to cover, I guess, with the whole defensive line situation right there. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I know a clear example of Derek Hunter told me himself when he was at G-Day. He said that Nolan Smith went to Kirby Smart, and he said, I want five guys that I should focus on for the 2019 class among those guys that were there at G-Day. And Kirby gave him just two names. Those names were C.J. Clark, and those names were Derek Hunter. Now, Derek Hunter is going to be that wild card recruit. He's very he's one of those guys that is very moved by certain visits. He's a very emotional recruit. He's been taking a lot of visits lately. He's been to Georgia. He's been to Clemson. He's been to South Carolina. He's been to Penn State. He's been to Florida. I think Florida fans are really upset with the fact that he committed to Florida State. So there's a few bricks we got to just kind of take apart right here. I think the main nugget of what I want to say here is even Georgia's heralded class of 2018, you got to remember that was powered by a pair of three-star defensive tackles, Tramell Walthor and Jordan Davis. So I'm not going to sit here on the witness stand, as you like to say, and say that nothing is wrong with Georgia's defensive line recruiting. But the simplest thing to there is to simply say Georgia's defensive line recruiting can definitely improve from the level it's currently at to where it needs to get to be.
So if you're watching us right now live on Facebook or YouTube, Twitter, get your questions in for Jeff. For me, if you want, we'll have sort of a wide-ranging, like I said, really kind of loose conversation here today. And let me be very clear about something before we start drilling down on, Derek Hunter a little bit more. I think my perspective on what's going on with Trey Scott and defensive line recruiting and the Georgia program overall is not so much to be critical, right? I don't really have – in anything to specifically criticize. In fact, I think we'd be foolish to be too critical given the fact that, as we've sort of been over and over again a million times, last year things looked even more dire for the 2018 class than they do currently for the 2019 class, and we all know how that finished up. So this is not me being critical of Georgia. It's simply me being somewhat confused by the status of Georgia's defensive line recruiting, because Derek Rambo-Hunter, at least based on the Georgia fans that I talk to every day as a part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, he was an incredibly popular prospect. And yet Bud Elliott, who's a recruiting reporter that I respect, who writes for Tomahawk Nation, that's an SB Nation-affiliated site, he apparently, with sources close to Derek Hunter, said and wrote on the heels of Hunter's commitment to Florida State that Hunter tried to commit to Georgia and that commitment was not accepted. Now, it's important to remember here, this is Bud Elliott writing for an audience of mostly Florida State fans. Mm-hmm. That's not what FSU fans would want to hear on the heels of Hunter's decision. In other words, Elliott has motivation to maybe withhold that unless it was absolutely positively true. In this case, that's exactly what he reports, is that Hunter wanted to come to Georgia. So I guess the question I end up asking is, and I'm hoping you can kind of answer this for us here, but today, if Georgia doesn't want Derek Hunter, and if they didn't want C.J. Clark, who committed to North Carolina State earlier in the week, then who do they want? Yeah. Have they just decided they don't need defensive linemen anymore? Because that doesn't seem to jibe too well with what most Georgia fans would view as the real critical needs for this program.
It's funny, Brandon. I think that the question at hand can kind of cut both ways. When the fan starts pounding the table in mid-June, of all things, and says, what is going on with the University of Georgia's defensive tackle recruiting? That could cut both ways. That could mean, A, that they're wanting to know why Georgia's not getting the prized defensive tackles that it's been getting at every other position so far under Kirby Smart. But it also might mean, I think, directly to your point, what is going on with Georgia's defensive tackle recruiting in terms of who do they want? Who do they actually really want right there? And, you know, there's reports out there. These are questions that you got to ask. And only really the two people that know that are the Georgia coaches and also the family. There's a lot of misdirection about a lot of defensive tackle prospects with the University of Georgia over the last few years. But, what's Joey Harris going to do? What's C.J. Clark going to do? Mm-hmm. Derek Hunter. Let's back up one little thing on Derek Hunter right now. So Derek Hunter tweets out yesterday that he was committed to Florida State and a highly impressionable recruit. I talked to him a lot, and Derek always told me that he hoped that he was going to make his decision at an All-American game. Mm-hmm. In the absence of an invitation to an All-American game, he was probably going to do it before his senior season. So this is already an accelerated timeline for Derek Hunter. And very simply, he made a lot of visits this summer, and he found out where he could commit to and where he could not commit to. Now, that tweet where he committed to Florida State has been taken down, and I've asked him the question, is like, what does that mean? Does that mean that you're committed to Florida State? Now, there was some things going on the internet where there was some maybe typographical or grammatical errors in his original tweet, but that's kind of – that happens, Brandon.
Mm-hmm, sure.
They're not professional writers or graphic designers that are doing a lot of these notepad commitment tweets.
Yeah, listen, I misspeak on this show all the time. Yeah. I do this for a living. I'm not going to hold anybody to account for their – I'm not the copy editor for Twitter. I'll say it that way.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, there's the thing. Did he take it down because he wanted to put up a better, truer version of his commitment statement? That's up in the air. But what usually happens in a situation like this is when a guy goes ahead and commits, everybody else that was recruiting him was like, hold on, man, wait a minute. What's going on there? Because they don't want to lose a recruit. I know the Florida Gators, they kind of had Derek Hunter right on their board. Yeah. But here's a little bit of how the sausage is made right there in terms of defensive tackle recruiting. There are flaws to Derek Rambo-Hunter. There were a lot of flaws, which I kind of discussed directly and indirectly on your show, to C.J. Clark. You know, Josh Harris, there's not the perfect defensive tackle prospect. Maybe Trevon Walker is that guy. Yeah. And even then, there's like, is he a defensive end or is he a true inside guy, an interior lineman? But the reason why some of those guys, Sopcich, Trevon Walker, those guys are rated so highly is because there are fewer warts. There are fewer negative things to think about them. And with a lot of these cases, I think Georgia is trying to figure out who exactly they do want and who exactly they do want to go in on. And maybe this is a little bit of the Georgia staff thinking, We're going to see some film. We're not going to be rushed by a high school recruit to take a commitment. I expect a different Georgia commitment cycle this year than one last year. Everybody remembers Javion Becton. Everybody remembers Caleb Tanner. Everybody remembers Aaron Brulé. Yeah. There were a lot of guys that were basically placeholder commitments or just somebody to keep momentum going.
There were certain names associated with Georgia at this time last year that didn't energize the fan base the way that some of the last additions to the 2018 class did.
And now because of that tremendous, ginormous recruiting class in 2018, Georgia can pick its spots a little bit. Georgia does not have to pull driver with recruits now anymore. They can just kind of wait and see exactly who they want to be in the class. And in case of Derek Hunter, they need to see more sustained great play and great film going forward for a lot of things.
So as I've said before, this is a slightly different edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. We're live in Augusta, Georgia with the Exchange Club of Augusta. It means a lot of your comments throughout the program. We're essentially going to break format today and just sort of have kind of a loose, off-the-cuff chat with our buddy Jeff Sintel here. Before I take a lot of comments, let me play a little fact versus fiction when it comes to a Derek Hunter. First of all, fact or fiction, despite the fact that the tweet about committing to Florida State has been deleted, he is still a public commit to Florida State.
At this time, I know that offer was accepted by the Florida State coaches, and it's just a matter of whether he wants to rescind that commitment and everything else like that. So, and I think the thing that will be evolving, and we would call it a fluid news cycle in the business, is what is the status of Derek Rambo Hunter and his commitment? I will say this. Rambo has been to a lot of schools. He said glowing things about Penn State, Clemson, Georgia, Florida State. He was at one time committed to Miami. And I'm not going to get in anybody's business and tell them how they should handle their recruitment. Everybody's going to have their own way of doing things. This is Derek Hunter's way. And I think had he committed to Georgia yesterday, I think a lot of fans out there, and rightfully so, would have been thinking, well, is this terra firma, or is that really going to hold up?
Well, that's my next sort of fact versus fiction deal here when it comes to a Derek Rambo Hunter, a name we've talked about a lot here on Dog Nation Daily before. Even if he is publicly committed to Florida State, is it a fact that most schools, Georgia, Florida, are going to still view this recruitment as still wide open?
Well, all you need to do there is look at the records, Brandon. I think Georgia flipped or eventually took eight signees that were committed to another school at this time a year ago. Eight guys flipped from another school to Georgia eventually in that heralded class of 2018. So I think to use a metaphor from that Nolan Smith used, once a guy that Georgia wants commits, that's really just starting the saga a little bit and getting things rolling.
And then maybe the toughest question of all here, given the reporting that's been out there over the last 24 hours, is it a fact that Georgia wanted to see some more football on Derek Rambo Hunter before ultimately maybe the Dogs made their ultimate decision about him?
Yeah, all I'm going to be here is try to give it to you guys as authentically as I hear it and I see it. I'm not going to put any sort of spin on it. You talk to a lot of folks down there in Dunbar High School area in Fort Myers. You know, Quayshawn Fuller's down there as well.
Florida State commit.
I talk to a lot of coaches and scouts when I'm down there visiting because I want a heat check. I want to know, is this guy really good? Is this really good to game plan against? And you hear things about Derek Rambo, all the talent in the world, all the ceiling potential in the world. He did catch almost double-digit touchdowns as a tight end as a freshman at Dunbar High, and he just kept growing and growing and putting on weight. But what you heard a lot with Rambo Hunter was, man, if he ever puts it all together, he can be really good. But right now, definitely not a finished product, and there's a lot of things that he has to work on. I also heard that Quashawn Fuller was probably the more advanced and developed prospect at this point of their careers, even with Quashawn Fuller missing a lot of time last year with his shoulder injury.
A lot of questions coming in our comment section. We're going to take a lot of them here on this very special edition of Dog Nation Daily as we're live in Augusta, Georgia, hanging out with the Exchange Club of Augusta later on today. David Hemansky writing in about Trey Scott. This is something you and I have kind of gone both on and off air, round and round about. I think that my point on Trey Scott would be it is fair to put him on the spotlight of, hey, you see what James Coley's doing? The expectation is you do the same thing in recruiting. You see what Dale McGee and what Sam Pittman are doing? The expectation is Trey Scott needs to do the same kind of thing. I think it's fair to say thus far he hasn't done that. Is what I'm saying about Trey Scott a fair assessment of his time as Georgia defensive line coach?
Well, I wrote this, and I think I said this earlier on this week, and that's kind of the statement I still stick with is – I talk to a lot of schools. I talk to a lot of schools about Georgia's recruiters and how effective they are. I also talk to a lot of players. I even talk to the players that do not choose the University of Georgia, kind of like as an exit interview type thing, and want to know, did Georgia handle your recruiting properly? How did things go? And I always hear very glowing things about Trey Scott. The things that I don't hear is he's not going to come off with a toothpaste commercial type smile and all that sizzle. He's going to be straight. He's going to be down to earth. He's going to be very humble. He's going to look for that second father, older brother, mentor type relationship with his guys. And he's not going to sell the sizzle. He's not going to have guys dreaming about the NFL in 3 or 4 years. That approach is going to endear himself to a lot of recruits and families that value that. But it won't work for all families that value that. Things to think about Trey Scott when you're looking at the entire picture. I'm going to present a lot of information and let everyone out there kind of draw their own conclusions about Trey Scott. Number one is that Georgia, there are a lot of defensive tackles in the class of 2020, especially in-state. That's a better year for the University of Georgia to recruit in-state talent. The tackles in 2020, I'm talking about Jameel Burrows, we wrote about earlier this week, defensive end Miles Murphy. You've got Andy Boykin, the defensive end that's currently committed to Auburn. That whole crop of guys, Nazir Stackhouse, that crop of guys right there is a little bit more advanced than some of the best guys in state for 2019. Might be a matter of Georgia, instead of them taking 4 or 5 guys in 2019, they might want to save those scholarships for 2020 with those players right there. Another thing to consider there with this kind of, if you want to look at all angles through how everything's going on right there, is it's simple where everybody expects Georgia to recruit at a high level, but if they recruited the defensive tackle spot the way that offensive line, the way that running back has been recruited of late, it would almost be a little bit unfair. You got to remember, Trey Scott had spent a lot of time in North Carolina and then went to Ole Miss very briefly and went to Georgia. This is not a professional SEC recruiter coming on board at the University of Georgia. So you can't really expect him to close like a Sam Pittman would, or even, you know, Del McGee's relatively new to this, but I think Del McGee's just that good at what he does.
My name is Brandon Adams. I'm the regular host of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. This is Jeff Sintel. He's with us for the full broadcast here today. So if you're listening to us on the radio, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, you're going to want to stay with us the entire time in podcast form. I know it's a treat for you to hear more from Jeff Sintel and live here on video. Make sure you continue to get your questions and comments in, both on Facebook and YouTube. We'll take a lot of these over the course of our time together. I'll also remind you that Marco's Pizza's got a great offer for you. Right now, you can get 2 medium, 2-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. Now, I love the price on that, but I also love the authentic Italian recipe that's used to put this Marco's Pizza together, whether it be the 3 cheeses blended and melted together, the authentic Giammarco family recipe that's used for the sauce. We love Marco's Pizza, my family, and when you try it, you're going to love it as well. And the offer, it makes it even more enticing, 2 medium, 2-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. Go to marcos.com to find out more about that. Let's also take a lot more of your comments here today. A lot of folks enjoying seeing Jeff Sintel here on the program today. Also excited about us being in Augusta. Chavis Kermelin says, Augusta repping all day. And I do sort of feel like I'm with the mayor coming back to Augusta with Jeff Sintel, who is still a very popular figure here. Justin Phillips also writing on Facebook that Georgia needs to flip either Hunter or Clark. It's that simple. And obviously Hunter is one of those names we were talking about as a possible flip candidate a moment ago. C.J. Clark, who committed to North Carolina State earlier in the week.
Yeah, so again, it's an example. I think I would lean into the what's going on with the University of Georgia's defensive line recruiting rather than putting the accents on different parts of that statement. I spoke to some guys this week kind of advance of what's going on. I mean, everybody saw Justin Eboigbe go to Alabama this week. Culminates, you know, Jalen Humphreys is a guy. Rashad Chaney was kind of in Georgia's class, and then he wasn't in terms of what Georgia wants to do on the defensive line. And if Josh Harris is not a consideration for Georgia or a take for Georgia in the class, they're basically eliminating a lot of guys. Well, I got a not so fast, my friend.
Whoa.
Brandon. There is a state in the union that we haven't talked a whole lot about in terms of defensive tackle recruiting for the University of Georgia, and that would be the state of Mississippi.
Huh.
That would be the state where Dan Lanning is coming back with a lot of skins on the wall, coming back with a lot of good work. I had a conversation.
Dan Lanning fits I mean, I didn't know a lot about Lanning necessarily before he came on, but you hear him talk for 5 minutes, you're like, oh, this is another Glenn Schumann. This is another guy that's sort of cut from the very same cloth of that reservoir Kirby seems to want to go to when he needs these, you know, red-hot defense recruiters. I mean, Lanning just fits in perfectly.
I'm going to tell you this, my friend. I think I'd already rank Lanning right at the top five of Georgia's recruiters right now. I think there's a way. Give him about another year or two under his belt, and I think there might come a day where the pecking order of Georgia's recruiters, and you're going to figure it out yourself whether that's Dale McGee or Sam Pittman up at 1A, 1B. But I think there would be James Coley. And then at number four, that might be Dan Lanning pretty soon already, because that guy's getting it done. He relates to guys so well. Byron Young told me this week, Brandon, that two of the best relationships he has in all of college football recruiting are with Dan Lanning and are with Trey Scott. So that's something to file away. Lots of people think Byron Young's going to end up at LSU, his dream school, or Alabama. Alabama's going to have way too many defensive tackles to work with in terms of who they're looking with right now. Byron Young tells me he will likely, very likely, take an official visit to the University of Georgia. They're already in his top 10.
On YouTube, Christopher White, and if you're listening on the radio or podcast, you're not going to understand what Christopher's talking about, but he's asking me if I'm cold here on the first day of summer. I'm actually wearing a quarter-zip pullover. The reason why is because underneath this, I have, like, the reddest, whitest candy cane-looking striped shirt in the world. My guess is, A, that doesn't play very well on video anyway. I'm already packing a few extra pounds right now. I felt like the red and white horizontal stripes might not be the most flattering look for me. So I decided to go pullover over the red and white stripes to sort of keep me from looking like the world's largest candy cane, basically.
I think all the ladies out there on the broadcast need to calm down a little bit and have themselves a nice glass of sweet tea or something like that, Brandon. That's a little bit too much flesh going on for Dog Nation Daily right now.
Yeah, we are still a family show after all. Over here on YouTube as well, Dapper Dan says that Georgia needs to go out and find those junior college defensive tackles. And it is kind of funny that the gold standard, obviously, that Georgia's trying to aspire to here is Alabama, and that is one area in which Alabama has not been afraid to utilize, you know, junior college defensive tackles. I mean, you know, that is something that has certainly worked for the Crimson Tide.
20-second timeout on this. And I want to know this, and you good people out there, please weigh in. Give us what your takes in the suggestion box in the comments below. Why is it that Georgia, everyone penalizes Trey Scott and the defensive line recruiting for the high school players that they haven't gotten recently? When you look at 2016, they loaded up. They had a great haul: Rochester, Tyler Clark, David Marshall, Mikhail Carter. Their 2017 defensive tackle targets were Aubrey Solomon and Devontae Wyatt. They went 0-for-2 there. Wyatt obviously didn't qualify, or he would have been on campus. The 2018 defensive tackle, obviously Wyatt's now part of this class. And Jordan Davis, massive human being, but still not one of the nation's top 10 defensive tackles. Tramell Walthor, a three-star defensive tackle who's also going the junior college route. But the other thing I think people forget, why don't Georgia fans give Trey Scott and defensive line recruiting credit for Jay Hayes?
Very fair question. That's a very fair question.
So if you've been watching this program and we went through the whole part about what's wrong, Trey Scott, pointing fingers in mid-June, by the way, you got to sit there and say this. Jay Hayes was going to the University of Oklahoma.
Very fair.
Which is a big boy recruiting powerhouse machine. Remember that team that Georgia faced in the Rose Bowl? They need a guy like Jay Hayes in the worst way, because Oklahoma does not have a Julian Rochester.
That's true.
They do not have a Daquan Hawkins Muckle. They do not have a Mikhail Carter. They do not have a Tyler Clark. All their defensive linemen are about 250 pounds soaking wet. And Georgia flipped him from what was seen as a very strong commitment in short order. I just want to know why the defensive tackle recruiting is seen as deficient when they do bring in a likely first and second down starter as a graduate transfer.
I completely agree with you on that. It is unfair not to mention him in this discussion, because you can go back and watch. I mean, you can find those that NBC replay of the Georgia-Notre Dame game. Go back and watch Jay Hayes in that game. He had, I think, 7 tackles in the game.
Yeah.
He is a big, beefy guy. I do think he plays a lot for Georgia this season. And frankly, if you gave me my choice of at the defensive line position, probably more so than anything else, almost any other position, I'm fine with a freshman. I'll even take a freshman offensive lineman these days when you look at the kinds of freshmen that Georgia's recruiting, and I guess Alabama kind of in that group too. I'm fine with freshmen almost any position. A defensive line, I still like experience, and Jay Hayes is almost better than an incoming freshman elite recruit, mm-hmm. even though he doesn't probably quite get the same level of headlines because he has played. I mean, that defensive line, you see very few freshman all-SEC defensive linemen in the SEC. I'm not saying that's what Jay Hayes does here at Georgia. What I am saying is you look at these postseason accolades, it's proof that experience matters. So Jay Hayes is I believe, the best recruit that Trey Scott could have brought in. So that's a fair rebuttal to some of the Trey Scott criticism.
And the other thing to think about there is, I mean, let's say Georgia had the nation's number three defensive tackle that signed with him in the class of 2018. I'm going to follow up and kind of rubber stamp and what you just said there. Jay Hayes is going to be better than that guy. And actually, if anybody wants to go on social media and take a twirl around their keyboards or whatever, if you'll look at Pro Football Focus is a really great entity that analyzes yep. the metrics. You know, they kind of look at that baseball sabermetrics look at football. They analyze all the film with a very keen scouting and critical eye. And if you look, Jay Hayes, among returning defensive linemen, I think they have a rating for Jay Hayes. And he rates as one of the best returning defensive linemen in college football for this upcoming season. And he rates as a run stopper against the run as good as anybody Georgia has coming back. And to me, it should be no surprise to Dog Nation out there to see Jay Hayes play as well and hold up against the run as well as anybody that Georgia has early on in the season.
Al Clement says, how do you guys feel about our defensive line that's going to be starting the 2018 season? I'll let Jeff answer this. I'll say that I love the starting group here for 2018. The backups, I think that depth, as Kirby Smart's talked about, is still a bit of a concern. But when I go out here and talking a lot about the defensive line issues, for me it's what happens after Tyler Clark. It's what happens after Julian Rochester. It's what happens after some of these guys cycle out of the program. This is one of those deals where you really can't take a year off in the recruiting cycle. So my concern's not so much on the field in 2018. Barring a significant injury, I think that Georgia may be somewhat fine there. But it's really 2019-2020 on the field that I start to be a bit concerned.
Yeah, everybody's starting to worry about the defensive line and who are those guys that are going to hold up blocks in order for guys like Channing Tindall and Monty Rice and Quay Walker to come downhill and fill gaps. I think the thing to look about there with Georgia on the defensive line of the ball, 2018 looks secure, especially with Jay Hayes coming in. Everybody's going to point towards the future and what that position is going to look like there, but there's no denying that you need to be special on the defensive front, and you need to be special with about four or five guys in order to be great up front in the SEC, because that's the difference. You see the Georgia-Oklahoma game we mentioned earlier. That's a very clear example there about how Georgia eventually wore those undersized linemen down. That's physics, that's mass, that's power. But again, I want to make sure people don't have their hands too deep into the cookie jar yet. Bill Norton, top 10 defensive end, likely going to be an inside player at 6'6.5", 6'6",
and
270
pounds. Everybody likes him as a prospect.
Everybody likes the number two player in Tennessee. Give the man credit. This is not going to be I'm not going to play Jerry Maguire for Trey Scott here all this hour, but that's a guy who chiefly says, Coach Scott is one of the reasons why I chose Georgia, one of the big reasons why I chose Georgia. If you look at a class that starts out – now, walk with me, Dog fans. If you look at a class that starts out with Trevon Walker and Bill Norton as the top two, you have two top 10 defensive linemen that are coming into the University of Georgia. Well, that's already as good as any class in the Kirby Smart era, but I think everybody wants to sit there and see the running back goal, the running back pillaging, and what's happening there for Georgia. They want to see that translate to the defensive line. I wrote a whole blog one day about defensive line recruiting, about what's fact and what's fiction. I think the highly publicized misses of Derrick Brown, Aubrey Solomon, they kind of elevate the platform, and then they see guys in a make it year in 2019. Where the defensive tackles, the depth defensive tackles, again, Brandon, nobody was talking about C.J. Clark or Derek Rambo or Josh Harris or Justin Eboigby as the got-to-get defensive lineman. They were in the list of names that Georgia had to get, but the name that was always at the top for the Bulldogs was Trevon Walker. Mm-hmm. And, again, let's just think about what the class looks like in December. And if at the top of the board at defensive line you see names like Trevon Walker and Bill Norton, and then they find two more guys to kind of fill the needs in the slots for 2019, I think everybody there has to be highly pleased with that.
Galen Jacobs and others are asking about Eddie here today. Let me see if I can do this. Nate, would you mind? I think my bag is behind me there. Would you mind handing me that? I think I packed Eddie. I hope I did anyway. I should have put him out here earlier. I think there's a chance I may have packed Eddie. Let me try to pull that out, Jeff. And while I'm doing that, I'll also remind people that we're not just going to talk about defensive line recruiting for our entire time. We're actually very lucky to have you here as a part of our Dog Nation Daily broadcast all day today throughout the hour here. But the comment section is open for anything. You want to talk about on the field in the 2018 season? Talk about quarterbacks with Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. Obviously, we love picking your brain about the recruiting situation given what's going on here. But this is also a time to sort of talk to you about some of the things we don't always get to talk about. Your outlook for the 2018 season, open-ended for people to kind of talk about the same thing. We're live here in Augusta as a part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. And, Jeff, it's really sort of that free-flowing conversation where you can kind of address some of the subjects you don't always get a chance to address.
Yeah, and while we're pillaging and Brandon is playing Indiana Jones and goes speed-lunkering through his backpack for Eddie the Blind Squirrel, that's actually my bag.
That's not even my bag, yeah.
I'm like, that's my –
this doesn't look like my stuff.
That's my camera lens in there. I didn't know Brandon had a camera lens, but –
So here's my bag right here.
I want everybody to – I want to point back, and I'm going to do a Dog Nation Daily Rewind. Maybe one day we'll have sound effects for that, like Wayne's World. But early this week on the Intel, we wrote about Jameel Burrows from McEachern. Sorry, guys. Eddie's,
I did not bring Eddie. I thought I did.
Eddie doesn't go on the road. Eddie's a superstar. He only plays in the home venue.
That's exactly right.
It's kind of like Uga. Some places he can't come along.
That's exactly right. He only does home games.
Jameel Burrows, a name to think about there. I kind of clearly let him do the talking there about what he's thinking there in terms of how he feels about Georgia, how he feels about his decision. Jameel Burrows, nation's number 6 defensive tackle on the composite. I think he's a little better than that. I actually agree with the 24/7 sports rating that has him number 4 overall. He's going to make his commitment on August the 25th, okay. I believe, to honor his mother. And again, I said earlier, sometimes what we do is kind of programmed a little bit. You see Jameel Burrows a little bit there, and he's a guy that is heavily talking about choosing the University of Georgia. He says the University of Georgia is his leader. Nation's number 4 or 6 defensive tackle, depends on who's ranking him. And that's a guy, when we sit there and say the 2020 defensive linemen in state are better, that's a clear example of what we're talking about.
Tom Lavelle in our Facebook comment section asking about the idea of a Chris Hinton flip. How realistic is that?
I think that's the one people need to put underneath their stocking or put on their Christmas list for Santa. Michigan is still very strong. Academics are still very important to the Hinton family. That's why he chose Michigan. That's one of those, if you were looking for, I'm going to look like the smart guy at the water cooler at the tailgate when someone wants to get exasperated about defensive line recruiting in mid-June or July or even August. In the back of your mind, that the staff's not going to give up on Chris Hinton, and that might be a name late in the game. We'll see where Georgia stands, and we'll see where Michigan falters a little bit during the 2018 season.
Let me change the subject here for a minute. Shane Bentley has an interesting comment on YouTube. He says, to be honest, I feel that this team has a better chance to go all the way than last year's. The overall talent is crazy. I think what Shane is saying there is kind of interesting because it kind of follows up on the heels of what some other people say in our comment section a lot, which is this. If you want to go back to 2016, a lot of people, some of them experts, pundit-type people, would say, hey, Georgia fans may need to be patient for 2017, but watch out for 2018. Georgia's going to be really good. And then there almost seems like this moving of the goalpost. Georgia was better than expected in 2017, so the vernacular, the language from the experts, the pundits sort of changed to, well, Georgia was good in 2017, but there may be a drop-off in 2018. I think what Shane, the commenter, says there is kind of interesting because you do lose all-time great, both players and leaders, and Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter. It's been ad nauseum how valuable those players were for the program. Davin Bellamy, Isaiah Wynn, you go on and on and on. But the overall talent level now is higher. I mean, the composite talent level, we mentioned Bud Elliott earlier. He does his blue chip ratings every year. Georgia, when he factors in the ratio of 4- and 5-star players, it's going to be like 2 out of every 3 players in the roster are former 4- and 5-star players. This is a more talented roster from a composite standpoint than 2017 was. What does that do for a UGA fan's outlook?
Well, I agree with a lot of that. I said that even last year during the season. I said, watch this team. It's great. But the team that they'll be on the field in 2018 will be more talented. The team that will be on the field in 2019 will be more talented. I've watched those pundits out there, guys, who basically reflect what they saw in 2017 as a bearing or as a course for where the program is heading. Georgia, for instance, lost some all-time greats. I'm always an evaluator when I look at a team. I think about which team has more seniors, translation, 21-year-old men competing against 19-year-old men in skill positions and in the trenches. That's one of the things I always look forward to in terms of matchups. But Georgia, you're not going to hear this guy. I'm going to tell you this right now. I don't know if they've shared this with you, Brandon, but when 2019 arrives and those boys are signed and those guys are on campus, I will be the guy that says Georgia does not need anything else in order to win a national championship. And they can go 2-for-4 or 2-for-7 on the defensive tackles they want. You look everywhere else around the ball. You look at Georgia getting the chance to add two incredible receivers in Jaden Hazelwood and Dominic Blaylock to the mix. You get the chance of them potentially adding another Noah Kane or another Trey Sanders to the mix at running back. You look at what they're doing, adding another tight end, more cornerbacks, maybe by guys like Tyreek Stevenson, Jalen Perry, DJ Daniel, the guy who just took his official visit to Georgia.
Junior college players in the country.
JD Bertrand, you're going to look at once these pieces fall in the cracks, I'm not going to be a guy that says this team does not have what it needs, because that team will be fully assembled. Sure, there's going to be a player here or there or somebody looking towards the 2021 depth chart or something like that. But when you look at Fields and Fromm at the top and all those running backs, I said something last night on my show, Brandon. I don't know if I'd made it very clear to a lot of my audience that shows up on the Wednesday Night Lives. I kind of put my thought out there, and I know it's a very early and advanced thought. But I think when all is said and done with the 2018 recruiting class and they've all went through their time at Georgia and, I don't know, 12 of those guys get drafted pretty early in the NFL draft, I think the name Zamir White is going to be the most heralded, the most impressive, the most game-enabling winner for Georgia. Now, Fields, he will be great in his career. Everybody knows about that. But I think this is Georgia. This is the way they run the football at the University of Georgia. And you can put him in the name and the conversation with Gurley and Marino and Chubb and Michelle. The chief difference that Zamir White will have is he will have a five-star line that he will run behind for all three of his years at Georgia. And I am saying just all three of his years at Georgia, barring another injury. He's going to run behind the greatest assemblage of offensive line talent Georgia has ever had. And he's going to get the ball a lot of times in key situations. And he's going to have guys on the perimeter that coverages have to respect. And I think when all is said and done, that's my prediction. Everybody wants it during talking season. I think he will simply be the most effective and most prolific game-winning tool that Georgia will have out of that class.
That's an exciting thing to think about, and that is Jeff Sintel. My name is Brandon Adams. We're live here with the Exchange Club of Augusta doing Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, on the road today in Augusta, Georgia. A little looser format, so if you're watching us on video, we're obviously loving your comments. If you're listening to us on the radio or on podcast form, thanks for being patient with a little different version of our show. We'll be back tomorrow in our typical format, but having a good time today, doing things in a little more light way, a little looser format as we're out here on the road today. That means taking a lot of your comments. And by the way, Jacob Mahaffey in the YouTube comment section, kind of looking at some of the opponents that Georgia's going to play. We're obviously here in Augusta. That's the home of the famous sort of border bash every year when Georgia and South Carolina get together. Jacob weighs in on South Carolina. He says, I think South Carolina has more overall talent than Missouri this season. Having the game earlier in the year makes a difference, too. So let me use Jacob's comment here as a springboard to you to talk about the Georgia schedule for a moment. I'm very clear about something. I don't think there's any team in the East right now that's close to Georgia at all. Now, I think that South Carolina has a pretty big gap between itself and most of the rest of the East, but I still think there's a pretty big gap between the Gamecocks and Georgia here. I don't see Georgia being challenged in the SEC East, which leads us to debate. Does the road game at LSU or Auburn coming to Athens, do those games feel like challenges? But in the SEC East, I don't see one for Georgia. Jacob mentions Missouri and South Carolina, two East opponents that Georgia plays on the road in the first month of the season. How do you handicap the SEC East right now?
Well, I like that. I like that thought, Brandon, because we are in talking season right now. And I want to point everybody to the Dog Nation message board. I don't even know if my friend Brandon Adams has seen this yet, but I'm going to say I get in the habit of referring to a five-star message board poster. I call him a Charles Baxter. We've got a few Charles Baxters right now on the Dog Nation message board. But one of those fine gentlemen, what they did, Brandon, is they put an assemblage, and this was the theory they worked behind. they put the Georgia starting offensive 22. This Georgia's top 22. And then they put together an all-star team from the rest of the SEC East.
Yeah.
And they put together the best Carolina has, the best Florida has, the best Missouri has. And I think that was a pretty decent reflection of what the premise I'm kind of aiming toward right here is. I actually think the game that Georgia fans are not looking at, that maybe they should look a little bit more at, is the Missouri game. I think that game, as much as people want to say about Derek Dooley, as much as people want to say about what direction that program is in and what type of elite recruits are going to Missouri, I think and it was kind of objectively done, and they looked at a lot of their athlons. You could tell they'd done their homework. But out of that assemblage of the all-stars on the rest of the SEC East, Missouri had seven of those. Mm-hmm. Seven out of those 22. Yeah. That was more than any other school in the SEC East. I think Florida only had three. Yeah. I know you wanted to know about that. You think about that combination of young team being assaulted in the secondary by Drew Lock on the road. You think about all those factors. Really a distance test. I know everybody's going to be geeked up for the SEC East test because a lot of players on the Georgia roster, they know about South Carolina. They know the players on South Carolina. Believe me, it is said and done when sometimes you go play a team and these players go, I know who that guy is. I know who that guy is. I know who that guy is. I got better guys on my side than that side. Not saying South Carolina won't be difficult, because it will be. Any road test in the SEC will be. But I'm thinking that Missouri game has a little bit more fear factor than what a lot of people are making out to be early in the year.
It's worth pointing out that ESPN's FPI data somewhat agrees with you on this. The FPI is a statistically based formula. I think a lot of Georgia fans would expect South Carolina to be viewed as Georgia's third toughest game. Road game at LSU, home game against Auburn, obviously sort of higher in stature there. But according to the ESPN FPI data, which came out a few months ago, Georgia's third toughest game is actually the road trip at Missouri. Georgia still has about a 78% chance of winning the game, at least according to the number crunchers there for the ESPN FBI. But that is sort of a validation of what you just said there, that, hey, watch out for Missouri just a bit. I don't mind telling you, and I've said this on SEC Country Live all the time, I think that Derek Dooley as offensive coordinator changes the calculus for Drew Lock in a big way. And that's not just a punchline here. I think that anyone who is good enough to calling plays is already calling plays. You know, this notion that he was Dallas Cowboys wide receivers coach, and he's even gotten some criticism for how he handled that role, and all of a sudden he's going to step in and replace a guy like Josh Heupel, who's now head coach at UCF, who was a tremendous offensive coordinator. Hard for me not to see the drop-off from Heupel to Derek Dooley being significant.
Here's what I see. I see Georgia early with guys like Tyson Campbell, Chris Smith, even a new face somewhat on the defensive side of the ball in the secondary, like a Mark Webb Jr. What if there is a sustained injury in that game and you go down another rung lower on the depth chart, and that maybe brings in guys like, you know, William Poole, mm-hmm. Eric Stokes, guys like that. You wonder about how Georgia will perform. I just think Drew Lock, a capable passer in the SEC. Everybody remembers that first half against Missouri. Yeah. That was inside the friendly confines as well.
Jamon Moore, the wide receiver's not there anymore, though.
He's not there anymore, correct. But they knew that they could get it around Georgia a little bit. That also somewhat felt like the start of the Rose Bowl, how Georgia could not stop the opponent in the first half, but then defiantly stopped the opponent in the second half when they brought a little bit more pressure, changed up things, and went a little bit more man coverage. That's a game, if you want to talk about and you want to sound like smart guy on the rocking chair around the water cooler a little bit, the Missouri game is one that I think, when you look at that interesting comparison, and Brandon and I were talking as we were driving down I-20, somewhere around Crawfordville or Sparta, somewhere like that, we were talking about how you look at Georgia and the amount of 4 and 5 stars, just 5 stars alone,
yeah.
The amount of 5 stars that Georgia has is clearly almost even double higher than the rest of the SEC East has put together. That's the sort of the thing that matters on the road early on in a college football season.
DSGB27 on YouTube says our secondary is going to be more talented this year than last year. Now, I think a lot of people feel really good, obviously, about DeAndre Baker at one cornerback.
Definitely.
They feel great about J.R. Reed at one of the safety positions. He's getting a lot of that sort of preseason love in these magazines as an all-SEC, even potential all-American candidate because of the way that he played last year. Most Georgia fans will tell you that Richard LeCount's going to step in and do big things as a starter at safety. But that still leaves a bit of an unknown commodity at the other cornerback position. I think the injury to Devon Wilson makes the star position a little easier, a little tougher to figure out there. How much do you worry if you're a Georgia fan about those two open defensive secondary spots, given the fact that you've got three starters at least that you feel really good about?
Well, I'm just going to go. I'm just going to go one of those old Atlanta Journal-Constitution grid sheets. Remember those things where
checks
they had
checks on one side of the other.
Checks on one side of the other.
I grew up with those things.
Man, those would get your mouth watering when you would see that thing. Who's got the checks? I want to know who's got the checks. We should do that on some of our pregame shows or something like that.
Yeah.
But here's what I think. J.R. Reed in 2018 will be better than J.R. Reed in 2019. I still contend that he was
he'll be better in 2018 than he was in 2017.
Yeah, he'll be better in 2018 than he was in 2017. I still contend, as great as DeAndre Baker looked at times, he was the second most effective defensive player for the Bulldogs in that unit last year. And then you go to DeAndre Baker. Obviously, the 2018 model is going to play just as good or better than the 2017 model. So already in two places, they're upgraded. Now you got to think about Richard LeCount. Can Richard LeCount be a contributing player? Is he going to be Dominic Sanders? I don't think he's going to be Dominic Sanders. The guy started 6,900 games in the SEC and seen so many defenses and so many trips and so many traps. But can Richard LeCount play better than Aaron Davis? Can Richard LeCount play better than Malcolm Parrish did in that secondary? I know I'm switching around defensive assignments there a little bit, but
a lot of these guys are hybrid cross trainers anyway.
Tyreek McGee, can he play as well as in 2018 as Aaron Davis did in 2017? I'm starting to think a lot of those guys can overall. And the X factor, and this is an X factor where I'm putting a very big piece in a position that my good friend Brandon Adams does not want me to put him in. But Tyson Campbell, dropping him down to play the star, dropping him down there to match up with a guy and say, take him away, much like Minkah Fitzpatrick did for the Alabama Crimson Tide in a national championship run, I think he can be effective early on in that role.
Okay, so please hear me out on this, because you and I have gone round and round on Tyson Campbell about this before. I have no doubt that Tyson Campbell would be a great nickelback, a great star position player. Mm-hmm. The comparison to Minkah Fitzpatrick, that seems reasonable over the course of a career. That's not unfair. What I'm telling you is if Tyson Campbell comes to Georgia and he's not a cornerback, Georgia's going to be worse off. Georgia doesn't have enough cornerbacks. Cornerback is that premium position on the defense the way that offensive tackle is for the offensive side of the ball. You know, if a guy comes to Georgia who you think can be a tackle, he turns out to be a guard, that's a loss for the program. Not a major loss, but a minor loss. If a guy that you recruited as a cornerback shows up to Georgia and he's a hybrid slash safety, that is a loss for Georgia. A good safety is not as valuable as a good cornerback.
Well, no. This is what I think. Everybody worries about rankings and stature and appearances. The Georgia football team is not built on that. The program is not built on that. Everybody recruits against Georgia right now by saying, look what happened to Trenton Thompson. Number one player in the country, does not get drafted. Well, he wasn't getting drafted, because he wasn't a starter for Georgia late in the season last year. At times, he was playing well, but Tyler Clark was a guy that would probably have gotten more reps this year at the defensive tackle spot than Trenton Thompson, the way he played last year. And all I'm saying is Georgia puts it out on the practice field, and the best guy rises forth. The best guy comes out. And everybody thinks Tyson Campbell needs to be at a certain position. I just think he needs to be an impact player in the Georgia secondary. Minkah Fitzpatrick is the best example I can come up with, because he was a nationally rated five-star cornerback, goes to Alabama, the machine of all places, and ends up coming through 3 years in that program as a first-round draft pick at safety. I think that's the goal for a lot of these players. Go in the first round, be highly productive, and play in a lot of ball games. I mean, let's face it. DJ Daniels is going to come in if he does choose Georgia, and he's a guy that was coming out of high school in 2017, and he is over 6 feet tall, and he is very fast. So he's a guy that's already, should he go anywhere in the SEC, he's going to be as mature and a grown, a more advanced prospect, especially after two seasons of junior college football, than even Tyson Campbell was in his first year at Georgia.
Graham Jones in the Facebook comment section mentioning Otis Reese here, who we have not talked about. He says, a little coaching, he can step up late in the season at the star position. I thought Kirby Smart on signing day was very interesting about Reese, because I think lesser programs would have viewed Reese as a linebacker. But Kirby Smart says, for a program trying to be elite, Otis Reese is actually a safety. Otis Reese is, I mean, from a body type standpoint, everybody makes the Thomas Davis comparison, which, you know, Davis was sort of like that classic old school star at the Georgia program in the early days of Mark Richt. I mean, is Otis Reese a freshman factor here?
I think he is, especially on special teams, Brandon. He's a guy that you don't see contributing highly for 2 years and then not going to the professional ranks as long as he plays near his potential or advances towards his potential. And I know Brandon has this theory a lot, and I don't know if he's ever kind of fleshed it out on this program or not, but you want three or four names at a position that are all highly regarded.
I do.
And for you, you don't care who does it. You just want the cream to rise to the top.
Exactly.
And you think, I've got four stars at a position. I just need two of those
guys to
be a boom and not a bust player. And you ensure the bust because you get four of them and they're all really, really good. And I think that's the way a lot of people would look at names like Otis Reese. They would look at names like William Poole and even the D'Angelo Gibbs saga that still won't be resolved until later on this summer. But then you also look at the options Georgia has back there. You also got to remember the 2017 class. This is the time where they've got to put on names. They've got to put on their stripes, and they've got to show what they've learned. And I think it's very interesting that a lot of the fans I hear do this too, is they sit there and they go through Georgia's options. Not a lot of people mention Eric Stokes. Everybody thinks about Bishop. Everybody thinks about Gibbs. They think about Reese. Will Campbell be a factor? Yada, yada, yada. I think two players that really get forgotten that by November of 2018 we should be talking about is the name Amir Speed, 6'3" corner who is a true corner. And then you also got to talk about Robert Beal as well. Everybody just automatically thinks Adam Anderson and Brenton Cox will shoot straight ahead to the top of the line and get that young guy playing reps. Robert Beal has put on a lot of weight in front of what I've told, has improved a lot, and has kind of shored up a lot of deficient areas that he had coming into Georgia. And that's a name, along with Walter Grant, that was expected to be a bell cow pass rusher in that class.
And listen, I mentioned earlier about go back and watching that Notre Dame game to see Jay Hayes wearing the blue and gold. Go back and watch that Notre Dame game for Walter Grant. Walter Grant that day, as a very young man, was in that backfield a lot. Grant he showed for me in the Notre Dame game, and you know maybe other people would say it's other games for Grant where he maybe highlighted his potential ability. I saw Grant in the backfield against Notre Dame. For a young man against a great offensive line, and last year Notre Dame's offensive line was great. For Walter Grant to be, you know, chasing down Wimbush, you know, tackling running backs in the backfield like he was there in that game, the proof was in the pudding on video there that day. I am high, high, high on the future of Walter Grant.
And here's what should be different to all of you guys out there in the Georgia program that's different from Rick teams and different from years past. The Georgia program, where it stands right now in June of 2018, after number 6, number 3, and number 1 recruiting classes, you know, so that's obviously an average ranking of 3 overall over the last 3 seasons. They don't need Brenton Cox and Adam Anderson to wear capes and Quay Walker and Channing Tindall to wear capes and walk on water. They don't need those guys to make it for the defense to have some flash and some sizzle. The real onus is actually on players like Walter Grant to go from good to very good, and for guys like Robert Beal and Malik Herring. Remember that name, Malik Herring, as well. Devontae Wyatt, another guy that's about that age. Those are the guys that you want to see starring in the Georgia defense and turning heads and creating, you know, oohs and ahs inside Sanford Stadium. Not so much all those freshmen. Now, they might because they're special, but you don't need those guys to contribute right away to have a great defense.
Couple minutes left here on video to take some comments. That's Jeff Sintel. I'm Brandon Adams. This is a very special edition of Dog Nation Daily Live. Here from Augusta, Georgia, with the Exchange Club of Augusta, where Jeff and I are going to be hanging out and speaking a bit later on today. Thanks so much for being with us as a part of this special broadcast, and a very special thank you to Marco's Pizza for making it all possible here. We're going to squeeze as many comments as we can here over the course of our next 5 minutes. Let me go to Al Clements on Facebook, who brought up the name James Cook. And I think there's a couple questions asked by James Cook. First of all, you have written and spoken on your own Facebook Lives and streaming videos, but the fact that you don't think there's much reason to be worried yet about James Cook, despite the fact that he's a later enrollee compared to some of the other Georgia incoming freshmen who are already on campus. So you can address that for a moment if you'd like. But also with this new redshirt rule, given the fact that Georgia has 5 really good scholarship running backs, Herrion and Holyfield can play. Zamir White, you talked about earlier, is a likely star. DeAndre Swift is already a star. Is James Cook a potential play four and redshirt guy for UGA, or is it too early to tell that yet?
Too early to tell, and most of the people are going to worry about him. I've still been told by very credible people that look for James Cook to get everything in order and be at Georgia couple weeks at the latest, 2-3 weeks, 4 weeks at the latest. Some sort of a July arrival there for James Cook. But you hear things on the recruiting trail, Brandon, and one of the things you hear is there's the expectation that one of those two, Elijah Holyfield or Brian Herrien, or maybe even both of them, will perform so well in 2018 that they will move on to the NFL, and that will be their last year. Mm-hmm. So that creates the momentum for why in the world could Georgia add a Trey Sanders or a Noah Cain, and this John Henry Jr. guy who we talked about last night seems to be trending towards Mississippi State right now.
That's a early July announcement for Emory.
They're recruiting him very sharply in the Saquon Barkley role, as they should. That's something that they can definitely feature there in that offense, given that the coordinator is coming over from Penn State. But there are a lot of places, and there's a lot of people that I think us in the media, we've got to remind folks about Georgia guys. And I don't think a lot of people think and say the name Elijah Holyfield and think might be the toughest guy to tackle in the SEC this fall.
He looks like a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
He looks like a pro wrestler. His muscles are just popping out of that jersey.
Everybody saw the burst and that extra gear he had in the kickoff return against Notre Dame.
That's another example of that Notre Dame.
And I think people – and it's almost like, you know, the shell game at SunTrust Park and you're moving guys around and – you know, even the coaching staff likes this. Everybody gets caught up on these freshmen that are the new shiny toys and the bells and whistles. But there's a lot of good unused talent that hasn't really burst onto the scene at Georgia that's just been waiting its time. And, again, I talk about that mature player. Elijah Holyfield came to Georgia in 2016, in the class of 2016, and he's raring to go.
We got 2 minutes left. Let's bang through a lot of these kind of quick here. Adam Hopper says – about Natrez Patrick. At this point in time, Natrez playing and contributing seems a lot more likely than D'Angelo Gibbs. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy that was already back at Georgia, and he was actually on the sidelines at the national championship game. He's been making some public appearances as well. I hope everybody also saw the video vignettes of Camp Sunshine. You saw Tyson Campbell wearing the number 3 jersey. You saw Zamir White walking like, you know, he just came down from Olympus. Like, lots of people are prone to make him think he does. You saw Jay Hayes out there. You saw big Jordan Davis coming off the bus. And it's very funny how they had him coming off the bus, because that's what Jordan Davis is about right now.
He's an off-the-bus guy.
He is an off-the-bus guy.
Big-time big guy.
Lots of guys. You see Isaac Nauta, who looks like he's in the best shape of his life for his junior season as well. That's another Georgia ace up their sleeve that maybe they can roll out a little bit more for the 2018 season.
Absolutely. Some other comments in the comments section. PDP Bell asking about Derek Rambo Hunter. We obviously spent a lot of time off the top of our broadcast talking about Hunter. Let's reset this. His tweet committing to Florida State's been deleted. No reason for you to think yet that commitment's been deleted, though, correct?
Correct. I think it has a lot to do with other things. A lot to do with other things. Maybe he just wanted to rewrite the tweet, get a redo, hit the reset button on that tweet. Again, a very impressionable recruit, Derek Rambo Hunter. We spoke about him early in the program. Not a polished, not a complete prospect. Definitely a guy that Georgia could use and would be one of the guys. But as the quick summation about what we talked about at the top of the hour was there's a lot of situations where Georgia – just isn't sure about what they want at the defensive tackle spot right now, the defensive line spot, because a lot of these prospects they're going after, even though they have the 4 stars and they're rated really highly, is there a lot of things that they need to work on with their game.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to this very special edition of a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Y'all know what I love when Jeff Sintel is hanging out with us here on Dog Nation Daily. To have him for the full show today was fantastic. If you missed a portion of what we talked about, you can go to one of our Dog Nation channels, the Dog Nation Facebook, Dog Nation YouTube page. You can watch the whole thing. We'll have, of course, the podcast up for you later on today as well. And, of course, we always appreciate you listening to the program right here on 960 The Ref. A lot of fun stuff coming up on tomorrow's show as well as we continue to count down and get ready for the 2018 season. It was so much fun hearing and reading the comment section today about how excited many of you are about the upcoming year, and hearing Jeff Sintel and me share our thoughts about the season seems to have kind of gotten you more excited as well, which we love because we love college football too, and we're both really excited about seeing what UGA is going to look like on the field this season. Thanks for being with us here today on the radio on 960 The Ref. We'll look forward to seeing you again tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.